This is Audible.
Balzer and Bray and Harper Audio present Amari and the Knight Brothers by B.B. Alston, performed by Imani Parks. One. I'm sitting in the principal's office, again. In the hallway, on the other side of the glass door, Principal Merritt is getting an earful from Emily Grant's mom. With all those wild hand gestures, you'd think I did a lot more than give her stuck-up little Miss Princess daughter a tiny shove. Emily got up in my face, not the other way around. Wasn't my fault she lost her balance and fell on her butt in front of everybody. Emily stands behind her mom, surrounded by her squad. They cover their mouths and whisper, eyeing me through the door like they can't wait to catch me alone. I lean back in my chair, out of view. You've really done it this time, Amari. I glance up at the picture of the brown-skinned boy on the wall behind Principal Merritt's desk and frown. Quentin proudly holds up the trophy he won in the state math competition. You can't see, but me and Mama are just off stage cheering him on. There's not much to cheer about anymore. The door swings open, and Mrs. Grant stalks in, followed by Emily. Neither makes eye contact as they settle into the chairs farthest from me. Their dislike for me seems to fill up the whole office. I frown and cross my arms. The feeling is mutual. Then comes Mama in her blue hospital scrubs. She got called away from work because of me again. I sit up in my chair to plead my case, but she shoots me a look that kills the words in my throat. Principal Merritt takes his seat last, his weary eyes moving between us. I know there's history between the two girls, but seeing as it's the last day of school, I want that girl's scholarship revoked, Mrs. Grant explodes. I don't pay what I pay in tuition to have my daughter assaulted in the hallways. Assaulted? I start, but Mama raises a hand to cut me off. Amari knows better than to put her hands on other people, says Mama. But this has been a long time coming. Those girls have harassed my daughter since she first set foot on this campus. The messages they left on her social media pages were so ugly we considered deleting her accounts. And we addressed that matter as soon as it was brought to our attention, says Principal Merritt. All four girls received written warnings. How about the stuff they say to my face? I lean forward in my chair, face burning. They call me charity case and free lunch and remind me every chance they get that kids like me don't belong here. Because you don't, says Emily. Quiet, Mrs. Grant snaps. Emily rolls her eyes. Mrs. Grant stands, turning her attention to Mama. I'll have a talk with my daughter about her behavior, but your daughter got physical. I could press charges. Be thankful this is as far as I'm taking it. Mama bristles, but bites her tongue. I wonder if it's because Emily's mom is right about pressing charges. Practically the whole school saw. Up, says Mrs. Grant to her daughter, and they head for the door. Mrs. Grant stops short and looks back at us. I expect to be notified the moment her scholarship is revoked, or the Parents Association will have a lot to say at the next meeting. The door slams behind them. I can barely sit still. I'm so mad. This is all so unfair. People like Emily and Mrs. Grant will never understand what it's like to not have money. They can do whatever they want with no consequences while the rest of us have to watch our every step. Are you really taking away Amari's scholarship? Mama asks in a small voice. Principal Merritt drops his eyes. We have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to physical altercations. School rules dictate she be expelled. Taking her scholarship is the smallest punishment I can offer. I see. Mama sinks in her chair. My anger melts into shame. Mama's already sad because of Quentin. I shouldn't be adding to her troubles just because I can't handle a few bullies. I know that it's been difficult, says Principal Merritt to me, since Quentin's disappearance. He was a great kid, with a truly bright future. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to connect the dots between that incident and the start of your behavior problems, Amari. I can arrange for you to talk to a counselor, free of charge. I don't need a counselor, I interrupt. Principal Merritt frowns. You should talk with someone about your anger. You want to know why I shoved Emily? It's because she thought it was funny to joke that my brother is dead. But he isn't. I don't care what anyone says. He's out there somewhere. And when I find him, I'll show you all. I'm shaking, tears streaming down my face. Principal Merritt doesn't say anything. Mama stands up slowly and pulls me into her arms. Go to the car, baby girl. I'll finish up here. We ride home in silence. It's been almost 6 months since Quentin went missing, but it doesn't feel that long. Seems like just the other day he was calling Mama's phone to say he'd be home for Christmas. It was a big deal because Quentin was always gone once he got that fancy job after high school. The kind where you can't tell anybody what you do. I used to swear up and down that Quentin was some super secret spy like James Bond. But he would just give me this little smirk and say, "You're wrong, but you're not totally wrong." Whenever I tried to get more out of him, he'd just laugh and promise to tell me when I got older. See, Quentin is smart. He graduated valedictorian from Jefferson Academy and got full scholarship offers from 2 Ivy League schools. He turned them both down to work for whoever he was working for. When he went missing, I was sure his secret job had something to do with it, or at least that somebody who worked with him might know what happened. But when we told the detectives about his job, they looked at me and Mama like we were crazy. They had the nerve to tell us that, as far as they could tell, Quentin was unemployed, that there were no tax records to indicate that he ever had a job of any kind. But that just didn't make sense. He'd never lie about something like that. When Mama told them he used to send money home to help out with bills, the detective suggested that Quentin might be involved in something he didn't want us to know about, something illegal. That's always what people think when you come from the Wood, aka the Rosewood low-income housing projects. The car rattles as we pass over the railroad tracks, letting me know we're in my neighborhood now. I'm not going to lie. It feels different coming back here after being on the other side of town. It's like the world is brighter around Jefferson Academy and all those big, colorful houses that surround it. Where I'm from feels gray in comparison. We pass liquor stores and pawn shops, and I see D-boys leaning up against street signs, mean mugging like they own the whole world. Jaden, a boy I knew in elementary school, stands with a bunch of older boys, a big gold chain around his neck. He recognizes the car and shoots me a grin as we pass. I try to smile back, but I don't know if it's convincing. We haven't spoken since Quentin went missing. Not since he started hanging with the guys he promised my brother he'd stay away from. Once we pull up in front of our apartment building, Mama buries her face in her hands and cries. Are you okay? I ask. I feel like I'm failing you, baby girl. I work 12-hour shifts 5 days a week. You should have somebody around who you can talk to. I'm fine. I know you only work so much because you have to. Mama shakes her head. I don't want you to have to struggle like I do. That scholarship to Jefferson Academy was your ticket to a good college, to a better life. Lord knows I can't afford to send you to a place like that on my own. I don't know what we're supposed to do now. I'm sorry, but I never fit in at that place. I cross my arms and turn to look out the window. Just because my brother made it look so easy doesn't mean I can too. I'm not Quentin. I'm not asking you to be your brother, says Mama. I'm just asking that you try. That school was an opportunity for you to see that there's a big, wide world outside this neighborhood. A chance to broaden your horizons. She sighs. I know it's unfair. But the truth is that when you're a poor black girl from the wood, certain people are gonna already have it in their minds what type of person you are. You can't give them a reason to think they're right. I don't respond. She acts like this isn't something she's already told me a million times. If you're not acting up in school, says Mama, then you're sitting in front of that computer for hours. It's not healthy, Amari. I mean, I know she's right, but it's hard to concentrate on schoolwork when you can hear other kids whispering about you and posting photos of Quentin on as many websites as I can. Lets me feel like I'm helping with the search. I know it's a long shot, but it gives me hope. Mama continues, when you get inside, I want you to slide that laptop under my door and leave it there. But Mama, she waves her hand, I don't want to hear it. Until you decide to take your future more seriously, that computer stays with me. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. I've got to get back to the hospital. I slam the car door after I get out, and I don't look back once as I stomp toward our building. What am I supposed to do now? Once I'm inside the apartment, I fall over onto the couch and bury my head in the pillows. This has been the worst day. Finally, with a groan, I pull myself up to a sitting position and grab my old, beat-up laptop from my book bag. Quentin won it after placing second at some international science fair forever ago. He gave it to me after he won a better one the next year. I'm not even surprised when the screen stays black after I open it up. I open and close it a few times, but it still won't work. Since it's clearly in one of its moods, I set it down and head to the kitchen to get myself some food. Except, even after I've calmed my grumbling belly, the laptop still won't turn on. I close my eyes and bring it up to my forehead. Mama says I've got to give you up, and there's no telling when she'll give you back. Please work. This time it powers right up. Thank goodness. The free neighborhood Wi-Fi is super slow, but I'm still able to copy and paste Quentin's missing persons poster onto a dozen websites. Normally, I'd check his email next. I figured out his password months ago. Amari Amazing, my fake superhero name from way back. But my curiosity gets the best of me, and I pull up Emily Grant's Instagram page to see if she posted anything about today. And what do I find? A photo of me on her profile with the caption, "Summer break, and guess what? We finally took out the trash at Jefferson. Expelled." The post has a ton of comments from other students. I only read a few before I slam the laptop shut. Never wanted her here. I heard she used to steal from the lockers. All it took was her dumb brother to drop dead. I didn't get expelled, and my brother isn't dead. Jaw clenched, I open my laptop again to write a reply to shut them all up. A notification appears at the top of the screen, and my whole body goes stiff. It's a new email for Quentin. One new email, from Discreet Deliveries. Which may not sound like a lot, but Quentin never gets new emails. Ever. I've been checking since the day I figured out his password. I open the email. Package delivered. You shall receive a separate email once Amari Peters has signed, as requested. Thanks for using Discreet Delivery Service, where they get what's coming to them, whether they know it or not. This email will self-destruct in 3, 2, 1. The email vanishes. I jump in surprise. Did that email really just? And what am I supposed to sign? A knock sounds at the front door. Delivery! 2. I sprint to the front door and yank it open. A man in tattered clothes stands hunched over in the doorway. I lean over him to look down the sidewalk in both directions. Where's the delivery guy? Hello there, he says without looking up. Might I trouble you for a moment? I instantly feel guilty for overlooking him. I don't have any money, but there's a Hot Pocket in the freezer you can have. Mama hasn't gone shopping yet. That's very kind of you, but I've actually just left a very fine restaurant. Oh, I say. So you're not homeless? Homeless? Heavens, no. The guy finally lifts his head. He's older, with a neatly trimmed gray beard. The thing he's been hunched over is a computer tablet. Why would you think that? My eyes drop to his patchy clothes. No reason. The guy follows my eyes, and his face goes bright red. I'll have you know that this is the height of fashion and... Oh, never mind. Might your name be Amari Peters? Whoa. I take a couple steps backward. How do you know my name? It's right here on the screen, he says, pointing to his tablet. I'll just need you to sign for your delivery, and I'll be on my way. You're the delivery guy? I say warily. And you've got a package for me? Yep. He flips the tablet around. From a Q Peters. I gasp. You're saying you've really brought me something for my brother? The guy nods. I do if this Q Peters fella is your brother. Says here he sent exactly one Broaden Your Horizons kit. Broaden Your Horizons? Wasn't that what Mama was just talking about? Is this some kind of joke? I should think not. He frowns. I only do deliveries part-time, but I take it seriously. Well, whatever you're supposed to be delivering, I'll take it. That's when I notice he's not carrying any envelopes or boxes. Where is it? Only after you sign, I'm afraid. The guy offers the tablet, and I grab it, messily signing the screen with the tip of my finger. I look at him expectantly. The package? The man taps the screen a couple more times. Left it in Q Peter's old bedroom closet. I just stare. You've been inside my apartment? With Q Peter's permission, of course. He clears his throat loudly. Now then, I'm afraid I'll be needing your memory of this whole encounter. You see, we at Discreet Deliveries take pride in our customers' anonymity. Don't worry, you'll still get your package. At some point during the day, you'll feel the sudden, unexplainable urge to clean out that closet. And there the package will be. You need my... what? I take a nervous step back. Just the one memory. The guy pulls out what looks like a TV remote control. Then he squints down at the tablet again. Oh, my mistake. Seems your name is on the memory intact list. Someone's off to the bureau, I'll bet. Best 30 years of my life. Anyways, good afternoon. I blink and the man is gone. What in the world just happened? And what's in my brother's closet? Even after all this time, I half expect to hear Quentin yell at me for barging into his room without his permission. I step inside and glance around at the wrinkled wrap posters hanging alongside his framed photographs of Stephen Hawking and Martin Luther King. His bed is messy, like always, and all his academic trophies and honor roll certificates fill up the back wall. The investigators tore this place apart, looking for clues about what might have happened to him. But me and Mama made sure to put everything back exactly like it was. I think we both secretly hoped we'd find something the police missed, something only family might recognize. But that just didn't happen. Neither one of us has been in here since. It hurts too much. It's not until I get all the way inside that the memories hit me. All the times Quentin and I used to play in here, or how sometimes he'd put on a playlist while we lay on the floor, joking and talking about how we were going to take over the world one day. How we were going to show our loser dad who ditched Mama that we're worth something. How we'd always have each other's backs, no matter what. Sure, Quentin might be 10 years older than me, but we've always been tight. Tick, tick, tick. Okay, so Quentin's room has never ticked before. Suddenly I've got goosebumps all over. Maybe that weird delivery guy was telling the truth. The package is supposed to be in Quentin's closet. And sure enough, with each step closer to the closet, the sound gets louder. Did he send me a clock? I bite my bottom lip and pull open the closet door. It's empty except for a huge, ugly old chest that Quentin got from the thrift store when we were younger. While I was digging through the doll bin for a black Barbie, he had his eyes on this raggedy chest with half the leather cover missing. Claimed he needed a place to hold all his master plans. By the sound of it, whatever Quentin sent me is inside. Thankfully, he broke the lock years ago, so getting in is as easy as lifting the top. I dig through countless beat-up folders and old notebooks, searching for anything that might tick. It's not till I get to the very bottom that I find a loudly ticking black briefcase, a white post-it note on top with Quentin's handwriting, "For Amari's eyes only." Quickly, I take the briefcase out of the chest and set it on the floor. What could be inside? Fidgeting with the locks doesn't get it open, so I try yanking it apart. No luck. That's when I notice another post-it on the other side. "Will open at midnight, after the last day of school." I swallow, my heart booming. Quentin never said anything about having a briefcase for me, but that's his handwriting. Maybe he wants to explain where he is and what happened. After 6 months of worrying like crazy, could this be how to find him? I glance over at Quentin's alarm clock, 4:13 p.m., midnight is nearly 8 hours away. But what is it I'm waiting for? 11:58 p.m. I'm in my room, sitting at the head of my bed with my knees pulled up to my chest. The briefcase sits at the foot of my bed, looking suspicious. I check the hallway again. Mama's been home for a few hours, but no light shines under her door. She must be asleep. Good. Whatever's inside this briefcase, Quentin made it clear that only I'm supposed to see it. 11:59 p.m. I pace back and forth. Okay, I'm totally tripping, right? What do I honestly think is going to happen? 12 a.m. Click. Hiss. I swear I jump a whole foot in the air. I creep over to my bed and take a seat. After a calming breath, I lift the top of the briefcase. Green and purple stripes stare back at me. I reach inside, pull the smooth fabric from the briefcase, and hold up what seems like a suit jacket to the light. It might be the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I reach inside and pull out the matching pants. I have no idea what's going on, but I can't help but smile. This is definitely Quentin's corny sense of humor at work. And there's more in the suitcase, an envelope, and a pair of thick metallic shades. Attached to the shades is a chain of post-it notes. Number 1. Please lie down before putting these on. Number 2. I'm serious about lying down first. Number 3. Pinky swear level serious. Okay, I get it. I bring the shades closer. Aside from being heavy, they seem pretty normal. Certainly not dangerous enough for 3 warnings. Are they supposed to make you dizzy or something? Well, if it's pinky swear serious, then fine. I'll lie down. I shove the briefcase to the edge of my bed and lay back before sliding the glasses onto my face. I'm not sure what the big deal. Amari? Comes a voice I'd recognize anywhere. Quentin? 3. I whip my head around to see my brother standing in the middle of my bedroom, a nervous grin on his face. I scramble off the bed so fast I trip over my own feet. Next thing I know, I'm across the room with my arms wrapped around his middle. I'm shaking as his arms hug me back. I missed you too, he laughs. I relax my grip on him, and he steps back, out of my arms. I don't think I've ever felt so happy in my whole life. My big brother is here, like really here. How? Where have you been? We've got to tell Mama! I can't get the words out fast enough as I stare up at his very alive face, a big goofy grin sitting below his wide eyes and uneven hairline. I'll explain everything, but for now, I just need you to trust me, okay? Of course I trust him, but how did he just appear out of nowhere? Okay. Follow me. He turns and runs out of the room. I give chase, skidding to a stop in front of Mama's darkened doorway. I have to tell her Quentin is back. She won't need to be sad anymore. We won't have to fight anymore either. Everything can go back to the way it was before. There's no time. Quentin calls from the living room. We've got to hurry. He opens the front door and dashes out into the hallway. I glance back at Mama's door as I sprint through the living room, wondering if Quentin's voice might have woken her. Her light doesn't click on. But I can't let Quentin go now. I run after him, and it's all I can do just to keep up. Where are we going? The roof, he calls back. The roof? Quentin and I used to sneak up there all the time, even though Mama said it was too dangerous. Like we didn't have sense enough to stay away from the edge. We run up a dozen flights of stairs until we reach the wide, empty roof. Only it isn't empty tonight. Is that a boat? I ask. Quentin grins over his shoulder. Sure is. The boat is the size of a school bus and looks like someone literally dropped a small log cabin on the back of it. Smoke wafts up from the cabin's stone chimney. Shiny gold railings surround the front half of the deck. I can't help but laugh at how ridiculous this all is. What is happening right now? How did it get here? Gotta hurry. Quentin disappears around the other side. I follow, running my fingertips across the smooth hull of the ship. The wood is so glossy. I can see my reflection in the moonlight. Quentin waves me over. He tugs on a lever, and a section of the ship falls open, becoming a short staircase. Quentin climbs in first, with me behind him. One long room runs the length of the boat. I'm able to make out 2 bunk beds and swords? Before Quentin leads me up another staircase at the end of the ship. We emerge on the deck, and Quentin brings me over to where 2 large wooden captain's wheels are mounted. The wheel in front of us turns left or right like every other ship, but the wheel to our right is angled so that it can only be pushed forward or backward from where we're standing. I reach out and let my fingers graze the wheel. then jump as the ship jerks forward a few feet. He just laughs. You're going to want to get some altitude first. He nods to the second wheel. I step back, shaking my head in disbelief. When you say altitude, you don't mean... Oh, I do mean. He smirks and takes hold of the second wheel, gently pulling it forward. My whole body goes stiff as the ship rises in the air. I throw both arms around the railing, holding on with everything I've got. My apartment building and everything else in my neighborhood gets smaller and smaller as we continue to rise. How is this happening? My brother is having the time of his life, laughing at me. Relax. The ship has been triple balanced. It's impossible to fall off. Quentin, we're flying. You're just going to act like this is normal? Again with the smirk. Maybe it is. Quentin grips the first wheel with both hands, and the ship surges forward. Everything becomes a blur, the stars above stretching into glowing streaks. I can feel the wind on my face, but for as fast as we must be going, my legs really do feel steady, like I'm still on the ground. He releases the wheel, and the ship glides to a smooth stop in midair. The smell of sea salt tickles my nose. There's water in every direction. Is this the ocean? My brother nods. Take a peek through that telescope next to the railing and look down. Tell me what you see. Down? Who uses a telescope to look down? Still, I step over and peer through. All I see is ocean. Keep looking. It's a special telescope, so it might take your eyes a few seconds to adjust. I squint a little. Nothing. And then, something. It appears only for a second before it's gone again. A streak of white, like lightning arcing across the ocean floor. What was that? I ask. Keep looking. And this time, use the dial. As I turn the dial, my view through the telescope magnifies. Now I can see that those streaks of light are actually glowing trains racing across the ocean floor. No way, I whisper. I zoom out a bit to find more trains, and I'm nearly blinded by all the light. That train is just one of what seems like thousands of them, zigzagging and swirling in every direction. For as far as I can see, the ocean lights up, like it's trying to outshine the starry night above. The whole world becomes a light show, just for me. I turn to Quentin, tears in my eyes. It's beautiful. But the big smile Quentin's been wearing since he showed up in my bedroom begins to fade. The International Railways of Atlantis. I only wish I could have shown you this in person. I don't understand, I say. I wanted you to know just how vast and how wondrous the world really is. Everything you've seen, from those trains to this ship, is real, Amari. They're out there anytime you want to see them. Everything. Except me. I shake my head. But I'm looking right at you. You're looking through the shades. This is only an interactive recording. We call it a wakeful dream. I left instructions for its delivery in case something happened to me. And I guess it did. I took a dangerous job I love dearly, and I knew the risks. Still, I really wish I was there with you now. The world around us begins to dim. I rush over and throw my arms around him. What happened to you? I don't know, Quentin says softly. But this dream was only supposed to be sent to you if the Bureau declared me missing or dead. You're only missing. I shudder. I can feel it. Quentin squeezes me tighter. Whatever happened to me, please don't let it discourage you from exploring this world to its fullest. Some of the things I've seen will take your breath away. I've left you a nomination with instructions on it.
A nomination?
I ask.
For what?
Everything goes black. Time's up, Chicken Little. I love you.
I love you too,
I whisper.
I'm going to find you, the real you,
no matter what it takes.
4.
Early the next morning, Mama knocks on my bedroom door so that we can have breakfast together. Mother-daughter time, or something. I woke up wondering if that wakeful dream really happened. But once I took a look at what else was inside the briefcase, I was convinced. My brother made a dream for me, put it inside a pair of shades, and had it delivered to my apartment. What kind of place can do that? I intend to find out.
You all right, baby girl?
Mama's voice snaps me out of my daze.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
I scoop up some cereal with my spoon. Mama watches me from across our small dining room table. I can tell she's worried about how I'm doing after what happened yesterday at school. There's a huge part of me that wants to tell her about Quentin's wakeful dream. She deserves to know. But how do you explain being visited by your missing brother and a dream where you took a flying boat to go look at some underwater trains without sounding delusional? And even if she did believe me, which I doubt, do I really want to risk getting her hopes up? She's only just gotten to where she isn't crying in her room every day. So I keep quiet.
What I did yesterday was for your own good.
Mama sighs.
I miss him too. I really do.
But right now, it's just you and me. It seems harsh, but it's my job to give you the best possible future. That can't happen if you keep your whole life on pause, wishing for something that may never happen.
I get it, I say quickly. Anything not to have that argument again.
Then you'll also understand why you're grounded until I decide you aren't. I nearly spit out my cereal.
Seriously?
You know better than to go around shoving people, even if they deserve it. Mama stands up from the table and grabs her purse. I've got to get to work a little early today. One of the girls has a sick baby at home. Don't let me find out you've been out that door. Understood?
Yes, ma'am.
The words stop Mama in her tracks, and she gives me a good looking over. Only time I'm ma'am instead of mama is when you're up to something. I put on my most innocent expression and shake my head. Well, before you get any ideas, I've got Mrs. Walters watching the place while I'm gone, and you know she don't have anything better to do than worry about what everybody else is doing.
I understand, I say.
Mama only said not to let her find out. She never actually said I couldn't go. Back in my room, I spread out everything from the briefcase on my bed. The green and purple suit jacket and pants. Two sheets of paper that were tucked inside the envelope. And the shades that triggered last night's wakeful dream. I try on the shades for like the 10th time this morning, but I still can't get them to work again. I settle for reading over the paperwork from Quentin's envelope one more time. The first page reads, "Mandatory. Staple atop all outgoing paperwork. Warning. Warning. In case you somehow missed the first one. Warning. Surely you get the idea by now." The following information is classified, as it refers to a location that handles several million very well-kept secrets. As a result, reading this file without the proper permissions may result in any number of dire consequences that include but are not limited to death by bottomless pit, being locked inside a metal canister and shot into space, being fed to a certain creature in a certain underwater lair that shall, for the purpose of keeping its existence a secret, remain nameless. I reread that first paragraph like 3 times. I mean, bottomless pits and secret underwater creatures? Now then, should you happen across this paperwork by accident and wish to know how to avoid such consequences, and we'll know if you've peaked, you are to do the following. Seal it up in an envelope. Wrap that envelope in no fewer than 3 yellow blankets, preferably all the same shade. Stuff it all in a box, tape that box shut, and mail it to the following address. None of your business, don't ask which street, New York, New York, 54321. Of course, if you have been deemed special, and thus do have the proper permissions, please feel free to move on to the next page. C. Kretz. Before last night, I would have laughed at that warning. But something tells me that whoever these people are that Quentin works for, they mean every word. Thankfully, Quentin made it pretty clear that this was meant for me. The second page confirms it. Nomination for consideration. Nominating party, Quentin Javon Peters, on behalf of Amari Renee Peters, to be used no sooner than the latter's 12th birthday and no later than the latter's 18th birthday. Please bring this nomination in person to 1440 North Main Street, Atlanta, Georgia, 30305, for the requisite interview. Upon arrival at this address, enter the leftmost elevator alone. Once the doors close, press the basement button, B, 26 times, and await further instructions. Now it's just a matter of getting there. Unfortunately, that warning isn't the scariest part of what was inside the briefcase. One more post-it is attached to the leg of the pantsuit. Wear this suit to the interview. Clearly, Quentin has lost his mind. He wants me to go around this neighborhood in a green and purple suit? I won't make it out of the building before someone cracks a joke, and I can't afford to get into another fight. I sit down on the bed, biting my lip. It all feels so unreal. This whole thing is crazy. But what if it is real? What if this is my one chance to find out more about my brother? My one chance to bring him home? Fine, I'll check it out. And I'll wear this hideous suit too. I creep down the stairs of our building as if I'm hiding from the bad guy in a scary movie. The nomination is tucked inside my jacket pocket. Thankfully, the street is clear. Until a bunch of smaller kids rush out of the next building. They point and giggle, and I'm so distracted I forget to duck beneath Mrs. Walters' window. She looks right at me and gets to jotting in her little notebook. I'm so dead when Mama gets home from work. Stupid, ugly suit. I get to the bus stop in the worst mood and plop myself down on the bench. A peek at my phone tells me the bus should be here any minute. It can't come fast enough. A clean, cherry red Camaro screeches to a stop in front of me. The windows all roll down at once, and some boys around 18 or 19 poke their heads out. One boy with long dreads grins at me. "Hey, little mama, you lost or something? I think the circus left last week." The whole car bursts into laughter. "Just leave me alone," I say, cheeks burning. "Where are the rest of the Skittles at?" More laughter. "Don't you have someplace else to be?" I growl. That's when the back door on the other side of the Camaro opens. Jaden hops out and jogs around the car. "Y'all leave my little buddy alone." The guys in the car make some more jokes about us being boyfriend and girlfriend before speeding off. Jaden takes a seat next to me on the bench. He looks like he's grown another 6 inches since I last saw him up close like this. Still seems way too young for all that height. His gold chain sparkles in the sunlight, and those Jordans are brand new. Looking good, Mari. I'm feeling the curly fro.
Thanks, I say with a smile. Feels like forever since anybody called me that.
He shrugs. You don't hang with us anymore. Not since Quentin. You know.
Yeah, I know.
Truth is, even though we're in the same grade, I only know Jaden through the tutoring program at the rec center where Quentin used to volunteer. It's kind of embarrassing to admit, but all my old friends were kids my brother knew first. Jaden laughs suddenly.
So I gotta ask, what's up with this suit? Is this how them rich folks dress?
Ha ha, I say. No, this is for an interview. It's hard to explain.
Oh, so you trying to get a summer job or something?
I nod. Something like that. Jaden's expression turns serious. He glances around before meeting my gaze again.
If you need some cash, I can loan you some.
He reaches inside his pocket and pulls out a roll of $20 bills.
Pay you back for all the times you and your brother looked out for me.
Jaden doesn't look it now, but he's had it worse than a lot of kids living out here. Me and Quentin always had Mama to support us. I can remember going to visit Jaden and him not even knowing where his mom was that day, or what he was going to eat that night. Me looking out for him was just me sharing whatever I had at the time. Sometimes it was just half my candy bar. He was always so grateful. I searched Jaden's eyes for a joke, but he seems totally serious. That is so much money, enough that Mama wouldn't have to worry over bills for a good while. But there's no way I can take it. I know whose money that is. Those boys are into some bad stuff. They're always getting arrested. Jaden shoves the money back into his pocket.
Man, you don't know anything about them. At least they care what happens to me.
Quentin's old warning to me comes flashing through my head. You're not going to change the world unless you hang with people who want to change the world too. Fast money and selling stuff that hurts other people ain't good. Be better than that.
My brother cares, I say. And I know those boys don't give you all these nice things without wanting something in return. Tell me you didn't drop out of school to run with them.
I do what I gotta do.
Jaden frowns as he meets my eyes. Getting good grades don't help me eat. And even if it did, there ain't nobody to help me study no more. Them people they got tutoring now don't understand. Always looking down on me, telling me what I should already know.
Quentin wasn't like that.
He could explain things in a way that made it all make sense.
Those words hit hard. It's a reminder that me and Mama aren't the only people who depended on Quentin. That tutoring program is one more thing on a long list of stuff that's gotten worse since his disappearance. I lean in closer to Jaden.
What if there's a way to get Quentin back here? Would you give the tutoring program another try?
Jaden gives me a puzzled look.
You saying you know where he is?
The bus turns the corner.
Not exactly, I say. But I might have figured out a way to find him. Just promise me you won't do anything that can mess up your future.
He'd be really disappointed. I pause a second before getting on the bus, but Jaden doesn't give me an answer. Once I've taken my seat, I meet his eyes again through the window. Jaden shakes his head, but gives me the biggest smile.
Okay, Mari, he mouths.
5. When I get off the bus, I'm surprised to find that 1440 North Main Street is a busy office building. It's a small skyscraper, all dark glass and metal. For a place guarding so many well-kept secrets, I would have thought it'd be somewhere more
secret.
This place is packed even on a Saturday. I climb the stairs to the front entrance, doing my best to ignore all the eyes my suit attracts, and then nearly panic when I notice the security desk just inside the doors. But strangely, the guard just smiles and waves me through, no questions asked. I spot the elevators at the back of the lobby and make my way through the crowd of adults. It's just my luck that I've come on the day of some business conference. The instructions said I have to wait for the leftmost elevator to be empty. That's way easier said than done. It's the elevator that gets used the most. I get so tired of standing around, waiting, that I take a seat on a small bench. After around 15 minutes, the traffic in the lobby begins to die down, and I finally get my chance. But just when I think I'm home free, a frowning, bald guy slips into the elevator with me. I reach out and hold the doors. The man spins around to face me. Stop that! I've got a meeting I'm already late for. If I don't think of something quick, I'll never get where I'm going. I've got a really bad cold. I throw in a sniffle and a couple fake coughs. I don't want you to catch it. The man scoots away from me, his frown deepening. Yes, well, maybe I can wait on the next one. He dashes out the elevator so fast, you'd think I had the plague. Finally, I'm alone. The elevator's doors shut. I take one more glance at the nomination form. Press the basement button 26 times. On the last press, the lights dim and a red beam scans the elevator. Nomination form detected, says a robotic voice. Please proceed. A loud click sounds, and the back of the elevator opens up to a winding hallway with metal walls. No way. How is any of this real? I lean forward, hoping to get a peek at where this thing leads, but it twists out of sight. No turning back now, I guess. Shaking off my nerves, I follow the hall to a small waiting room, six chairs with a magazine rack in the corner. At the counter, a plump blonde lady smiles at me. How can I help you? My brother nominated me for... What did he nominate me for exactly? Of course, the lady says politely. Unfortunately, our recruiter isn't in right now. A loud crash sounds from far off. Ah, she says. Seems he's just arrived. Use the door on the left and go on back. It's the last office on the right. I do as she says and pop my head into the half-open doorway. Inside, a desk lays in pieces on the floor. Standing over the mess is a really strange-looking guy. He's taller than I am, but just as skinny, with streaks of gray in his shaggy brown hair. But it's not really him that's the problem. It's his clothes. He's got on bright orange pants, traffic cone bright. His shirt is orange, too. I've seen orange shirts before, but this guy's shirt has the nerve to be covered in orange and brown feathers. Come, come! The man waves me inside without looking up. I'm just cleaning up a bit. I told the transporter to put me at my desk, not in my desk. He strokes his chin, but then again, I was chewing a rather splendid steak sandwich when I gave the command. I take one nervous step inside. Did he say transporter? My name is Amari, and mine is Mr. Barnabas Ware, but full introductions won't be necessary, I'm afraid. He still hasn't looked up at me once. This year's summer program has already begun. The kids will already be assigned to rooms by now. It's already begun. My heart sinks. Does that mean I'm too late? I only just got my nomination. Rules are rules. Whoever nominated you should have filled out the proper waiver if your school year runs long. There's always next summer. He finally looks up at me, and his eyes go wide. Many pardons. But if you don't mind me asking, Is that suit a genuine Dubois? I glance down at the ugly green and purple stripes and shrug.
What's a Dubois?
The man gasps. Only the most brilliant clothing and accessories designer in the world. He comes closer, stepping over the shattered pieces of his desk, then picks up the end of my right sleeve and rubs the fabric in his hand. Very good. Yes, very good indeed. Would you mind removing the jacket? I'd love to try it on.
Oh, sure.
It's strange that anyone would be interested in this ugly thing, except for maybe wanting to burn it and dance on the ashes. But then, this guy is comfortable wearing orange and brown feathers. I slide off the jacket and hand it to him. He actually tries to put it on. He's almost a foot taller than I am. No way it'll fit. But it does. Perfectly. My jaw drops. How? Ah, yes. It's certainly authentic. Never can tell with so many knockoffs going around. But only genuine Dubois's have the one-size-fits-all feature. Only way to be sure. The wife and I swear by them. Mr. Ware gestures towards his own outfit. My ensemble is from the Tropical Collection. Essence of a sandy parrot. Now, you might be wondering why it is I have on vacation attire. I'll explain. You see, we were on vacation, naturally, and having quite the time, I should add, when I received an urgent message from my supervisor that a child had been added to the list and no one was in the office. You're supposed to be able to count on your coworkers to pick up the slack when you're on vacation. You'd expect that, wouldn't you?
I guess. Can we get back to how my jacket...
Mr. Ware throws up his hands. Exactly. It's a reasonable thing to expect. But not when Thesda Greengrass is your partner. Always going to pieces whenever one of her bloody cats gets taken away. Can't understand why her neighbors might object to a tiger in the neighborhood. No use, though. She'll have another by the end of the month. Can't imagine where she gets them. Mr. Ware! I interrupt. My ears are ready to explode.
Yes?
My jacket, I say. How did it grow to fit you like that? Why? A patented enchantment, of course. How else?
An enchantment?
I lift an eyebrow.
As in magic?
Yes. Mr. Ware crosses his arms. If you don't mind me asking, how did you come by that suit exactly?
It was in a briefcase,
I say. My brother left it for me.
Ah, says Mr. Ware. I understand now.
I take it this brother of yours is the first in the family to go into this line of work?
Probably, but I don't really know what line of work this is.
He strokes his chin again. Normally, I'm not one to bend the rules, but how can I turn away a child with such splendid taste in clothing? However unintentional, he sighs. Very well, have a seat. I do what he says. It's pretty strange to be sitting across from someone over a pile of shattered desk pieces. It's my job, says Mr. Ware, to offer you a spot in our rather unique summer camp. However, I can't tell you very much about said summer camp until I get an answer as to whether or not you'll take it. Think carefully. If you decide you're not interested, then our meeting will end right here, and you can go back to doing whatever it was you planned to do with your life. It's why we meet here in this office and not at the actual bureau. But if you say yes, be warned that you will be obligated to attend this summer. Understand? I swallow and nod.
So the interview is just you asking if I'll take the spot?
Indeed it is, he says with a nod. Would you rather it be more difficult? I can cook up some algebraic equations if you'd like. I shake my head quickly. Mr. Ware chuckles. And your answer? As much as I want to say yes,
I can't help thinking of Quentin right now. My brother said what he was doing was dangerous. Is that true? At first, I think he won't answer, but eventually he says, "It very well can be." I'm suddenly super nervous. Visions of disarming bombs and wrestling alligators sweep through my mind. Is there anything else you can tell me? I'm sorry, but I've said far too much already. I'm afraid I can offer nothing more until you've decided. Even if it is dangerous, Quentin wanted me to experience all the things that he did. When has he ever wanted anything but the best for me? Just the memory of those glittering trains lighting up the ocean sends a rush of excitement through me I can't explain. And more than anything, this could be my only shot to find out what happened to him. I meet Mr. Ware's stare and say, "I accept," and then hold my breath for whatever comes next. 6. Mr. Ware leaps out of his chair and shakes my hand fiercely. "Congratulations! A fantastic decision! Always a pleasure to bring a fresh face into the Bureau of Supernatural Affairs." My hand is half numb by the time Mr. Ware releases it, but I have a much bigger worry. Bureau of Supernatural Affairs? Mr. Ware grins. "Go to any corner of the world, and you'll find tales of beings and creatures that only seem possible in our imaginations. What if I told you that living among us are all the beings we've come to pass off as myth? Trolls and sphinxes, mermaids and oddities you could see with your own eyes and still not believe. These and countless more dwell in our towns and walk our streets. One might be your neighbor, or even your favorite teacher. And not only that, many supernaturals have vast cities of their own, hidden just off the beaten path. The Bureau of Supernatural Affairs is the link between the known world and what is hidden. We are charged with keeping the secret." I'm not totally sure I buy all that. An odd suit is one thing. Hearing that creatures from books and movies might actually be real is something else. Okay. So, if that's true, don't people have the right to know if a werewolf is sitting next to them on the bus? Thankfully, werewolves tend to be trained people. But, yes, there is much in the supernatural world that is dangerous, and we do our very best to protect the innocent. As to your point about why, the supernatural world is kept secret for one very good reason. Peace of mind. People tend to fear what they don't understand. And fear can far too easily become hatred. Why, the Great Bug Conflict of 69 comes to mind. The Society of Sentient Insects had gone and invented people repellent spray. You'd think a reasonable person would understand that turnabout is fair play, but you'd be surprised how quickly reason goes out the window when the bug starts spraying back. A particularly rough year for the Bureau, that one. I cross my arms and lean back in my chair. That's not in any history book I've ever read. We're very good at what we do. Mr. Ware smiles, and we have been for a very long time. I'll see for myself soon enough. Right now, there's something that interests me more than myths or magic. My brother is missing. Is there anything you can tell me about him? His name is... My recruiter jabs a finger into each ear. The Bureau is not always the safest place to work. It's likely that your brother worked in one of the more dangerous fields. I can't say I know of anyone that's died or gone missing. I very purposefully keep away from that sort of news. I'm the one who brings them in, you see. I take the news too hard. I understand. I remind myself there are probably lots more people I can ask about Quentin. Mr. Ware reaches behind him and pulls a briefcase out of thin air. "An Invisitote," he says with a wink. "Never leave home without it." Inside the briefcase is a stack of books, He tosses one onto my lap. I try to read the long title on the cover, but the words are some other language. French, maybe. But then the letters flicker and fade, reappearing as 1001 Careers. Mr. Ware reaches over and starts flipping through the pages. You'll train in the summers until you're 18, at which point you'll become a full adult member of the Bureau, so long as you pass the tryouts. You'll receive a scholarship to any school in the country, no matter how exclusive, and no matter the cost. If you wish, you can change your specialty at the start of next summer's session, but you'll have to go through the tryout process again to keep the scholarship. He finally settles on a page. This is my job during nomination season. This publication lists every job classification the Bureau has to offer. What positions you are allowed to pursue depend on both your potential and your ability. I nod and look down at the page he's selected. Department of Supernatural Licenses and Records. Recruiter. Minimum badge allowed to perform this job. Wooden. Chief Responsibilities. Meets with nominated children to offer a spot in the summer training sessions in preparation for a career at the Bureau of Supernatural Affairs. What's it mean by minimum badge? I ask. That would be our next order of business, badge testing. Badges, you see, represent your current potential. Intelligence, bravery, curiosity, all those kinds of things. If I had to guess, I'd say you're a cardboard badge. There's a chart on the very first page. Cardboard? I frown and flip back to the opening page. Badges. Gold, silver, bronze, iron, copper, stone, glass, wood, plastic, cardboard, aluminum foil, notebook paper. My shoulders sag. Cardboard is all the way at the bottom, just above aluminum foil and notebook paper. Of course, the black girl from the projects would have an awful badge. Why would I think the supernatural world is any different from my own? I suppose you know how to use one of these. Mr. Ware hands me a long, very thin plastic tube. Works like a thermometer. Except, I notice there aren't any numbers. Welp, here goes nothing. I blow off a piece of lint and stick the thing into my mouth. It's only under my tongue for a second before Mr. Ware asks for it back. He holds it up for me to see. The red liquid rises all the way to the top, so fast it shatters in his hands. We lock eyes and he frowns. Interesting. Good interesting or bad? I ask. He doesn't answer. Instead, he pulls a small metal box with the words starter kit scribbled across the top from his Invisitote and pushes it into my stomach. Be at this address at 6 p.m. tomorrow. Tomorrow? But he practically shoves me out of his office. 7. Mama works even longer hours on the weekend, so she won't be home until really late. That means I've got no choice but to call her at work about going to camp this summer. The phone call goes something like this. Mama, what's happened? Are you hurt? Is everything okay? Me. I'm fine, Mama. Mama, Amari Renee Peters. You know not to call me at work unless it's an emergency. Me. It kind of is, though. I have to be somewhere tomorrow, and I need your permission. Mama. You do remember that you're still very much grounded. Me. I know, but... Mama. But what exactly? Me. It's Quentin's old summer camp. He must have nominated me before everything happened. Mama. A long pause. Is that so? You got the number to the program? Me. Reed's number listed in the How to Deal with Non-Bureau Parents pamphlet.
Mama, I'll give them a call and let you know what I decide. While I wait for Mama to call back, I go through the rest of the starter kit. Inside is my own personal copy of 1001 Careers, Protected Edition. It's so protected that I can't even read it. All the pages are blank. There's also a list of items I'll need to bring. Items needed. Yourself. Everything else will be provided. Last is a tiny vial of blue liquid. The attached tag reads, True Sight by Voila Pharmaceuticals. One drop in each eye. Take immediately. On the rare occasion that you find yourself with X-ray vision, please consult a doctor. It takes me a few tries, but eventually, I get the drops in my eyes. Nothing happens, though. Not even the X-ray vision. But I'm still so proud of myself, I do a little dance in the mirror. A knock sounds in the living room. I dash to the front door, wondering if it's something to do with the Bureau of Supernatural Affairs. But one look through the peephole, and I can see it's Mrs. Walters. Her permanent frown brings down my good mood even from outside. She's one of those people you can't ever imagine smiling. The type of person who looks annoyed even when they're on TV accepting a check for winning the lottery. I open the door and say in my most polite voice, Hello, Mrs. Walters. How can I help you? Don't you hello, Mrs. Walters, me. Your mama told me to keep an eye on you in case you try to sneak out, and I caught you. Saw you at that bus stop, and I saw who you were talking to. Wait till your mama hears about. I'm right in the middle of coming up with a really sorry excuse when I blink, and Mrs. Walters' facial features begin to swell and shrink, and that's not even the biggest change. Mrs. Walters? How long has your face been green? Mrs. Walters stops mid-sentence, reaching up to touch the end of her suddenly long, pointed nose. Her beady eyes bulge in surprise. You can see me? Really see me? I nod. You look like the Wicked Witch of the West from that really old movie. Mrs. Walters shrieks and steps back away from my door. That's what I get for buying that discount concealer. She throws down some powder and disappears into a cloud of smoke. No way. I step out into the hallway and wave my hand through the fading haze. Mrs. Walters is really gone. I guess Mr. Ware knew what he was talking about. There really are supernatural beings in the world. In my neighborhood. Not that I didn't believe him, but seeing it is way different from just hearing about it. And I guess I know why those eye drops are called true sight. I've seen Mrs. Walters 100 times and never knew she was a witch. What have I gotten myself into? It's Sunday afternoon and Mama is late. When she finally called me back last night, we agreed that she'd leave work today at 3 p.m. in order to make sure we had plenty of time to get across town. Instead, it's after 4 when she comes stumbling through the front door with shopping bags in both hands. She drops the bags when she sees me and wraps me up in a great big hug. This is so wonderful, she says. Just what you need. When Quentin came back that first summer, he was different, more mature. What's in the bags? I ask. Oh, I just picked up a few things for you. I know they claim you don't need to bring anything, but trust me, you'll be glad. I grabbed you some new pajamas, all your hair products. Oh, those fuzzy socks you love. My ears automatically tune her out the moment I catch sight of the Best Buy bag. I scramble over and open it up, gasping once my eyes land on what's inside. The sleek, wooden box contains the cell phone I've wanted practically my whole life. It's even the newest version.
I thought we couldn't afford for me to get a new cell phone. I ask, in fact, how can we afford any of this stuff? Mama just smiles. I won't have my daughter gone for most of the summer without a reliable way to keep in touch. But Mama, I say. She totally avoided my question. She puts her hands on her hips. Okay, I went to the payday loan place, but this won't be like last time. I'm like a balloon with a brand new hole, the way my excitement spills out of me. Last time Mama took out a loan, she had to use bill money to pay it back, and we almost got kicked out of our apartment for missing rent. Don't look at me like that, Mama says, that familiar sadness creeping into her expression. Just let me do something nice for you for once. I don't have the heart to fight with her when she gets like this. So I just say, okay, and force a smile. Mama smiles too, and then adds, I had a little bit stashed away in case of an emergency, and seeing as the program offers a scholarship, I won't have to put it toward your tuition next year. The scholarship isn't guaranteed, I say. There's a chance I won't get it. You are my daughter and Quentin's baby sister. Ain't a chance in the world they won't give you that scholarship. I open my mouth to remind her I'm not nearly as good at everything as Quentin is, but I stop myself. That would only make her sad again. Remind me, what time did you need to be there? She asks. 6? I say, glancing at the clock, it's 4:07 p.m. How long is the drive? Oh, we've got plenty of time, says Mama. Even with the big music festival going on downtown? Is that tonight? She asks. I'm so sorry, I completely forgot. Traffic is going to be a nightmare. We exchange a panicked look and make a mad dash to get ready. Mama swears she can get us to the address on time, as long as she sticks to her side roads and back streets. These aren't nearly as busy as the main roads, but they are definitely way more interesting than I remember. First, Mama cuts off a man who waves a fist at us, except it's not a fist, but a paw. And he isn't so much yelling at us as he is growling. My jaw drops, and I turn to see what Mama makes of it, but she doesn't seem to notice. It has to be the eye drops, right? It gets weirder. A man waiting at the next bus stop is literally on fire, but he doesn't seem bothered by it. Like, at all. He even lights a cigarette on his forehead. The lady that lets Mama turn in front of her? Snakes for hair. I try not to meet her eyes, in case she decides it would be fun to turn me into stone, Medusa style. But Mama just waves thanks and keeps on driving. It isn't until we spend the longest red light ever next to a dark alley filled with glowing eyes that I decide maybe I'll just keep my own eyes inside the car from here on out. I assume supernaturals like Mrs. Walters were rare, but they're all over the place, hiding in plain sight. As it hits me where I'm going, I can't tell if I'm shaking with excitement or fear. Or maybe it's a little of both. I'm about to be part of their world, the supernatural world, something I didn't even know existed 2 days ago. I wish I could tell Mama about all of this. It doesn't feel right to keep secrets from her, especially secrets that are this big. But something tells me she wouldn't be thrilled about her daughter going to the same secret agency that had something to do with her son going missing. Honestly, it makes me nervous, too. To keep myself from completely freaking out, I pull 1001 careers out of my bag. Only this time, thanks to those eye drops, every page is filled with words and pictures. As I flip through it, Mama glances over and asks, "What's that?" I panic and slam it shut. No need to be so dramatic,
says Mama. Is that your journal? Just that fast, I forgot that she isn't able to read it.